Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Dan Baer's interview with the director for the new documentary film, Ailey, Jamila Wingnut.
Do you feel as though you had to sacrifice anything to stay in dance? Everything.
The Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater is one of the most important contemporary dance companies in the world.
People were just, oh my God, they'd never seen anything like it.
Choreographers start with an empty space, a body or two, and we say, carve this space. I love creating something where there was nothing before.
I was born in the Depression, 1931. Rural country, tough times.
When I was 14, I discovered the theater.
And it touched something in me, but there was no body glad.
Alvin entertained my dreams that a black boy could actually dance.
Being able to say through the choreography, I am, it transcends dance.
I had my own ideas.
Not just to do a step, but to feel something.
He was working at a feverish pitch, totally immersed.
People say, why is he doing that now? If you're a black anything in this country, people want to put you into a bag.
This is what he took up as his crusade. Alvin's protest was on the stage.
And I want to feel all the anger and the sense of cursing at the outside room.
I wanted to do the kind of dance that could be done for the man on the street, the people, that it was part of their culture.
And that it was universal.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Next Best Picture podcast, where we are talking with Jamila Wingnut, director of the new documentary, Ailey. Jamila, how are you?
I am very well and excited to be here and talking with you.
Fantastic. I'm very excited to speak with you as well. I quickly have to say that before getting into film, I was a dancer for many years. So this movie was particularly special for me to watch, in part because I don't believe there's ever been this kind of documentary project about Alvin Ailey.
Yeah, that's great to hear.
Yeah, this is the first one, and he is one of the most important American artists in any discipline. And I was wondering why you think that is, and if that knowledge affected you at all while you were working on making this.
Yes, so the knowledge of his importance was looming over us through the whole of it. When you set out to make a film about another artist, part of the challenge is that your film has to be as good as the art you're going to feature, right? Because you don't want to be kind of in these glorious moments of the art and then the film is not sort of doing justice to that. So that, I think, was, something we were cognizant of throughout the making of it. And in terms of his longevity, obviously, I think his works get at the core of what it is to be human. I think there is just something in the specificity of the, dances he created, in the sense of what people are going through emotionally, in the fact that it's kind of narrative and therefore pretty accessible, that are a testament to the company's, continued success.
Yeah. And that was one of the other things that I found particularly resonant and kind of fascinating, was this idea that the film is tracing Ailey's personal history through the creation of Rennie Harris's piece for the Ailey Company's 60th anniversary, Lazarus. I was wondering how you arrived at that idea as a framework for the film.
There's so much serendipity in the making of this film. And when Insignia Films and I approached the company to pitch them on the idea of doing a biography, one of the things we said from the outset was that we wanted to have access to the company, to some part of a contemporary portrait of the company, because we understood that Mr. Ailey's legacy lived on beyond him, and that it wouldn't be a true portrait of him and his vision to sort of end with his death. And Robert Battle, the artistic director, said, you know, oh, it's amazing that you're coming to us today, because we just commissioned Rennie Harris to do this dance piece for the 60th anniversary that's going to be about, you know, Mr. Ailey's life and times, or that's their hope. And so we said, oh my gosh, well, amazing, let's get access to that. So yeah, it was just kind of an extraordinary stroke of good timing.
That's fantastic. What was your personal connection to Ailey or the Ailey Company before making this movie?
I, before making this film, was a fan, you know, of the company. I saw them for the first time when I was in college, and it just kind of blew me away and set me on a journey of continuing to see the company perform. And I have friends who are dancers. And so I was familiar with the company, but I am not a dancer. And and I wasn't familiar with, you know, the specific details of Mr. Ailey's story. So there was a lot of just kind of beautiful discovery for me as well in the making of it.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
You've watched them in unforgettable adventures, love affairs, and tragedies. Now it's time to hear their own remarkable stories. From the makers of Death of a Rockstar and Death of a Sports Star, this is Death
Ready.
Of a Film Star.
And
starring Heath Ledger, Marilyn Monroe, Chadwick Boseman, Robin Williams, Carrie Fisher, and Bruce Lee. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. You've seen them tell stories. Now it's time to tell theirs.
Yeah, there's a lot of his life that I hadn't heard about before seeing this. And in particular, you managed to get a lot of never before seen, or at the very least long unseen, footage of Ailey himself. Was that stuff that the company had that you got access to, or how did you get access to this, and what did it feel like watching it for the first time?
The archive in this film is something that I'm just so grateful for, that it exists. And, you know, that is a testament to the Ailey Company having really preserved, you know, copies of various dance performances and interviews that Mr. Ailey conducted through his life, including the audio only interviews that he conducted in the last year of his life that became the kind of pillar for us in the making of the film. And, you know, so it was great that once we were able to get some materials from the Library of Congress, we could see, you know, what was there. And I think, you know, one of the real gems for me in this is just seeing him in the rehearsal room with his dancers and really speaking, you know, as he tells, you know, the woman in the black dress in the Masekela scene, you know, what he's asking for her to dig into kind of emotionally, that kind of material of having access to him and his work process is great. And then similarly, you know, towards the end of the film, there's just that great moment where he's just telling a joke about, you know, the dancer and what he does with his hair and getting, you know, that kind of glimpse into him. Those were the kind of beautiful moments of meeting him as an artist and sort of seeing him as a man, his sense of humor and you know, and his, you know, he's very accessible, you know.
Yeah, he was. We sort of have this idea, I think, in our culture of these genius artists being sort of inaccessible and somewhat inscrutable, but this very much puts the lie to that. He is very, very personable and well spoken and funny at times, as you said, like with that joke. And he's a great raconteur of the stories of his life. It's fantastic to hear him in his own words.
Yes, it is wonderful. And I mean, the poetry, I just, I think when we started listening to those audio recordings, you're just like, who talks like this? Who tells stories like this? And, you know, I think, he knew that about himself, that, you know, he had a way with words. But I think he was also somebody who, as Bill T. Jones says, you know, he was in search of poetry in his dance works, but I think he was the kind of person who was in search of a poetic way of expressing, you know, what he felt and experienced. And I think that's just like lovely to live in.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm wondering, you know, you had all this amazing archive footage. What was your personal biggest discovery while making this film? A piece of information or a piece of dance that you hadn't seen or heard before?
I think there's a couple. I mean, the other piece of footage of him in the rehearsal room when he's, you know, being very intense and then he lets out that great scream, and, you know, his frustration at like, the dancers aren't getting it right. It was just like nice to see somebody frustrated in a creative process. And then it was a piece of footage that came in a little bit late, but it's that footage of the company on their first State Department tour. So it's 1962 and it's him and Carmen de Lavalle sort of taking in the cultural stuff and just seeing him, you know, he's so young. You really can see his youth in those images. And so I really thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah. Especially the stuff with Carmen de Lavalle. It was so fantastic to see her too in this. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Where's her biography?
Right. I know. It's probably in the works.
I hope so. Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned, you know, the company, the Ailey company itself was big groundbreaking for us in part because it was fully integrated at a time when society was not. That was something that I was a little surprised by because we've built up this idea that the Ailey company is the African American dance company, and seeing pieces with white and Latino and Asian dancers in it was revelatory for me in a way that I was not expecting. And I was wondering if there were any insights about that particular thing that surprised you while you were filming this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's something I was aware of the Ailey company, you know, because even if you see them today, it's not a wholly Black company. Although I agree that I think that is the perception of the company. I think it was, you know, I think it reveals something about Mr. Ailey's point of view about, you know, what we all should have access to in terms of storytelling and who gets to embody what kinds of stories. And I think in a way, you know, he has, you know, to have, you know, a Japanese person dancing in Revelations is to say that, you know, Black life is universal because you are going to dance my story. And you have the capacity to embody this experience, and in embodying this experience and in people seeing you embody that experience, it's a way of him speaking to the universality of life, because it's human life, you know. And I think that it can become you can take that idea for granted. And it's something he says all the time, you know, like, it's a human story. I want to showcase humanity. We are humans. But, you know, if you think about the time at which he is assembling his company in the late 50s, you know, that is not what people thought. And so I think creating an integrated company at that time was a way of actually kind of driving home a political point that we don't necessarily immediately see, but it is a political choice to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that, I mean, for me at least, has sort of gotten lost in his legacy a little bit, that this was the fully integrated dance company going around the world and representing America. It was the Alvin Ailey American Dance Company.
Right.
And
right.
There's something even powerful about that statement, just saying that, you know, like, African American dance is American dance.
Right, right. I mean, we talk about
that time.
Yeah, we talk a lot today about whose stories get centered. It's like a part of our common language in the arts, yeah. Right? And centering the stories, and, you know, to think about the fact that not just who he's centering, but even the kind of the aspects of life that he's centering, right? He is centering the kind of everyday experiences of, you know, people at a getting some relief at a juke joint on a Saturday night, and, you know, showing up to a church, you know, service, you know, on the following Sunday. I think his real, you know, that makes him a modern dancer, obviously, that he cared about the everyday man, which is part of that tradition. But, you know, I think what he decided was fit for the grand stages of, you know, the United States and then the world, you know, speaks volumes to, again, I think his political, a kind of political sensibility that he had.
Absolutely. You seemingly interviewed everyone for this film, former dancers and the stage manager for the company, and you know, Bill T. Jones, who was inspired by him, and all these things. Was there anyone that you really wanted to interview but didn't get the chance to?
Oh, yes. There were a couple dancers from that original company. I mean, Carmen de Lavallade was there, and actually Don Martin also went on tour with the company in their first tour. But of the original dancers that danced in Blue Suite, there were a couple that I had hoped to interview. But, you know, just age and time, it was not on my side. So just because I, you know, to think about how they experienced the reception of those dance works was just something that would have been wonderful to hear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would have been very cool. But you still managed to get an amazing spread from all that time. And we unfortunately are out of time at the moment. But just before we leave, I want to ask you, what was your favorite Ailey piece?
Oh, it's Cry. Oh. I feel like I'm so biased, but it's Cry.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, because I obviously had seen Revelations before, and it's always beautiful, but this is my first time seeing that in this film. And wow, Judith Jameson doing Cry is incredible.
Yeah, and it's a 13-minute piece, and we couldn't show the whole thing. So if you can get a chance to see it, there's Jacqueline Green, I think, is the name of the dancer who most often performs it now. So if the company comes to town, do try to see it. In fact, I think it's the 50th anniversary of Cry, because 71-21. Yes, it is. So it will be available to see, and it is just phenomenal.
Oh my God. So I will definitely be on the lookout. Well, thank you so much, Jamila. Thank you for speaking with us. Congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
Really looking forward to seeing what you do next.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Dan Baer's interview with the director for the new documentary film, Ailey, Jamila Wignott, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. Ailey is currently playing in theaters courtesy of Neon, and you have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you will get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X grown-up.
Every week, the Gen X grown-up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, genxgrownup.com. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it. No, right.